I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, they gather together. Pope Francis becomes the first pontiff to address world leaders at the G7 summit. We look at his comments on artificial intelligence and his meeting with President Biden. Pro-life provisions. Debate rages on Capitol Hill amid mixed signals over support for the unborn. Defending church teaching. The head of the U.S. Bishops' Conference examines the Catholic response to gender ideology. And there's something funny going on. Pope Francis holds an unusual meeting at the Vatican. We'll explain. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, in his historic address to the G7 summit in Italy, Pope Francis discussed the dangers and promises of artificial intelligence. While it arises from the use of a God-given creative potential, the Pope stressed the need of healthy politics capable of overseeing it. EWTN Vatican correspondent Colin Flynn has more.
Good evening, Tracy. No machine should ever choose to take the life of a human being. At the G7 in Borgo Niazia in Italy, Pope Francis raised the alarm about artificial intelligence, especially when it is used in warfare, and stressed that people should not let super powerful algorithms decide their destiny. He warned world leaders that while AI could be both terrifying and fascinating, it needs to be monitored carefully to preserve human dignity and life. The Holy Father did point out that AI could be used in positive ways. It could give people creative tools, could inspire people. It could broaden access to knowledge around the world. When the Pope arrived at the G7, which is one of the largest such gatherings outside of the UN General Assembly, he was warmly greeted by the Argentinian President Javier Milei and received a hug from the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. He got a kiss from Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and he had a conversation with US President Joe Biden. Now, when it came to the ethics of AI, the Pope spoke more generally and warned that it could increase the gap between developing and developed nations and said, quote, "It is up to everyone, especially politicians, to make good use of AI." Pope Francis added that AI would influence medicine, communications, education, politicians and the workforce. This has been a concern in countries around the world that AI could take more and more jobs from people, increasing levels of unemployment. The Italian Prime Minister, Meloni, has repeatedly warned about the risks AI poses to the jobs market. In the afternoon, Pope Francis had a private meeting with the US President Joe Biden. The White House said in a briefing that they were to discuss the war in Ukraine, focusing on children who had been forced into Russia, climate change and the Middle East. At around 7:30 p.m., the Pope left the G7, returning by helicopter to the Vatican. In Rome, Colm Flynn, EWTN News Nightly.
Meantime, the G7 meetings with President Joe Biden and other world leaders like Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni did not specifically address abortion, but the topic still surfaced in their final group statement. White House correspondent Owen Jensen brings us that side of the story. Owen.
That's right, Tracy. I just looked through that document. It does not contain the word abortion, but make no mistake, it is referring to that, just using other terms that essentially mean the same thing. Now, President Biden has been pushing for abortion expansion since day one of his administration. He firmly believes the issue can help him win the White House again in November.
We showed you President Joe Biden, who's pro-abortion, speaking with Pope Francis, who is pro-life. The two also later meeting privately. And on the abortion issue, the G7 final document leaving out the word, but still clearly using abortion-related language, affirming their commitment to, quote, universal access to adequate, affordable, and quality health services for women, including comprehensive sexual and reproductive health and rights for all. Abortion remains a major focus of President Biden's 2024 re-election campaign. Vice President Kamala Harris leading the charge yesterday, reacting to the Supreme Court's ruling on mifepristone.
This is not a cause for celebration, because the reality is certain things are still not going to change. We are looking at the fact that two-thirds of women of reproductive age in America live in a state with a Trump abortion ban.
The vice president and the Biden campaign going full throttle on expanding abortion, even though the president, who is Catholic, does not often say the word abortion himself. Vice President Harris warned about what she called threats to reproductive freedom in America.
This ruling is not going to change that. This ruling is not going to change the fact that Trump's allies have a plan that, if all else fails, to eliminate medication abortion through executive action.
But at the G7, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's government, according to reports, worked to water down references to abortion in the final statement. In Italy, Meloni campaigned on a slogan of God, fatherland, and family, and has prioritized encouraging women to have babies to reverse Italy's demographic crisis. And Pope Francis equates abortion to, quote, hiring a hitman to resolve a problem.
Up next for President Biden, it's back to the campaign trail. He now returns to the U.S. to take part in a Hollywood campaign fundraiser. And former President Trump, meanwhile, turned 78 years old today, and he'll hold a campaign event in Racine, Wisconsin, next week at the White House. Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, and for more on the Group of Seven Summit in Italy is Mene Ukabarua, a member of the Wall Street Journal editorial board. Mene, always good to see you. As we heard from Owen Jensen, abortion was not one of the main topics discussed at the summit, but of course it was referenced, and it even caused somewhat of a clash between Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and French President Emmanuel Macron. What more can you tell us about this dust-up?
Absolutely. So it seems as if Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni went into the summit really feeling like she wanted to use her temporary role as president of the G7 to try to temper the language of the communique that the group would put out with regard to abortion. In the end, it does seem as if the final language does refer to universal access to women's health, but it doesn't use the word abortion. And Emmanuel Macron, who is going to be contending for election very soon, within the next couple of months, seemed to take this as an opportunity to try to burnish his own credentials in front of his pro-choice audience back home. And so he criticized Giorgia Meloni for stripping this language, suggested to Italian reporters that France doesn't share your values when it comes to moderation on abortion. Meloni defended her actions and said that in the end, what she said in the final communique was consistent with the language from last year. But it does seem as if in very subtle ways, these two leaders are trying to jostle over the fine details about how emphatically the G7 is going to espouse its dedication to abortion rights.
Yeah, and there was also some criticism over support for LGBTQ people, or what some had felt was a lack thereof in Friday's communique. Mene, what was the issue there?
Well, it was a very similar story. If you look at the communique that came out after last year's G7 in Hiroshima, the language about advancing LGBT rights was very explicit. Whereas this year, under the leadership of Prime Minister Meloni, it was a much more moderate, more tempered statement. And so this is something that Macron also alluded to in his comments to reporters, and something that goes against the general direction of the G7, which tends to be very progressive and tends to see human rights as being totally bundled up with promoting an LGBT agenda. But that is very much not what Meloni ran on back home in Italy, and she wants to use her leverage to moderate their language.
Yeah, and meantime, one of the top issues and the first one discussed was migration and ways to combat human trafficking, and also investment into the countries where the migrants are coming from, like Africa. Talk to us more about that, and what type of consensus, if any, did the world leaders come to?
Well, it was bound to be one of the big topics of the summit, because almost every country in the world, and particularly in Europe, is dealing with large migration crises. A lot of these leaders, particularly Macron, have had a big political hit because of their inability to deal with it. And so they knew they need to put out some statement. But many of them are actually very soft on the issue, are unwilling to actually take bold action to restrict illegal migration in the countries. And so what we got was just a commitment to invest in some of these countries where migrants are coming from, with the hope of improving the financial circumstances of those countries and giving less of an incentive for people to come in the first place. I think it's unlikely that there will be any real concrete action that comes out of it, but they knew that they wanted to go home and be able to say that they pledged to do something about the problem.
Yeah, Mene, with the summit wrapping up tomorrow, what do you think are the big takeaways from this year's meeting?
Well, the biggest really is a reaffirmation of their commitment to help the Ukraine war effort. you did see a pledge from President Biden specifically and from all the nations together that they're going to continue to fund the Ukraine war effort. And they also agreed to use seized Russian assets to help finance the Ukraine war effort. And so that obviously is not new. That's been one of the unifying factors of the G7 for the past couple of years. But it did show a renewed commitment to do that in a way that is going to be promising for those defenders of the Ukraine's efforts in their war against Russia.
Mene, thank you as always for coming on. We appreciate your analysis. God bless.
Thanks a lot, Trace.
From the G7 in Italy to a NATO meeting in Brussels, where Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin underscored the alliance's enduring commitment to Ukraine. NATO defense ministers discussed a plan involving 700 NATO personnel and partner countries who will oversee the training for Ukrainian armed forces. Since Russia's invasion, two of its nearby neighbors joined NATO amid security concerns. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin noted this during his speech.
Putin's war is not the result of NATO enlargement. Putin's war is a cause of NATO enlargement. And NATO is more resolute and more capable than ever.
Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin proposed an immediate ceasefire if Ukraine renounces plans to join NATO and withdraw troops in Russia. Ukrainian president dismissed the pledge. Well, concerns on Capitol Hill are growing within the pro-life community that some Republican lawmakers may be backing away from the abortion issue as the election approaches. Others stress success in November may hinge on engaging voters on pro-life issues. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more. Eric.
Good evening. With the two-year anniversary of the overturning of Roe v. Wade just days away, and with the U.S. Supreme Court's recent rulings and states passing various abortion bans, all this brings up a bigger issue. Is it time for a real debate on when life begins? Some pro-life lawmakers say absolutely.
We shouldn't allow the pro-abortion folks to be able to take the field and not be challenged culturally. We should engage and to be able to talk about it. So great, let's actually have this conversation. When is a child a child? When a heartbeat has happened, when they can feel pain, when they're conceived.
The Republican-controlled House just passed the National Defense Authorization Act that would limit military personnel access to abortion-related services, ban taxpayer money for transgender surgeries, and more.
Extreme MAGA Republicans are trying to, once again, march us toward a nationwide abortion ban and restrict the reproductive freedom of women serving in the military.
Our military fighting force is for just that, a fighting force. And unfortunately, the Democrats have tried to take it to be an agency where they get to push a lot of their ideology and a lot of their agendas.
But most pro-life provisions were dropped in last year's version passed by Congress. During his meeting yesterday with GOP lawmakers, former President Donald Trump urged them not to run away from the abortion debate.
He did mention that he's pro-life, you know, I mean, and, you know, that these decisions belong in the states, and that's what the Supreme Court did. And he said some went when states got it, some went well and some did not.
Senator Lankford tells me that time to engage is now.
Every child is valuable. There aren't some children that are disposable and some children that are valuable. We have to make that argument. We have to engage. And for some people legislatively and around the country, they're now pushing back and saying, OK, I don't want to think about this more. This is hard. Well, it's exactly the time we should actually talk about it more, not less.
The appropriations process has a long way to go, so keeping pro-life provisions is not a sure thing. And there are reports that former President Donald Trump wants to rewrite the Republican pro-life platform to run on in the fall. Exactly what that is has yet to be released. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, there's a new development in an Alabama case that brought widespread attention to the availability of in vitro fertilization. In the initial lawsuit, it was decided that the parents of frozen embryos killed at an IVF clinic could proceed with a wrongful death lawsuit. In response, the Alabama legislature passed a law that provides civil and criminal immunity to IVF clinics for the death or damage of embryos. And now the plaintiffs in the original case are asking a judge to declare that immunity law unconstitutional. Now, the Supreme Court strikes down a ban on rapid-fire gun accessory called the bump stocks. The nation's highest court said the Trump administration did not follow federal law when it banned the accessory. The Trump administration enacted the ban back in 2017 following the deadly Las Vegas country music festival shooting. Well, a dramatic last-minute detail in South Africa has set President Cyril Ramaphosa to an almost guaranteed re-election. He now holds a majority of seats in parliament. The historic agreement brings two of the country's longest and fiercest political rivals together. It is the first time South Africa has a ruling government where no party has a majority. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including sticker shock. We take a look at some sky-high hidden costs around owning and maintaining a home. Welcome back. A new study is sounding the alarm over the cost of owning and maintaining a single-family home in the United States. According to findings from Bankrate, the price of owning and maintaining a home is now more than $18,000 a year, and that does not include the mortgage. That is a 26% more than it was 4 years ago. So why so much? Well, Bankrate says the hike in hidden costs are due to inflation and an increase in housing prices, as well as soaring insurance premiums. Joining us now is Catherine Pokalik, Director of Social Research and Associate Professor at the Catholic University of America. Dr. Pokalik, thank you so much for being on again. We appreciate it. No surprise here that the cost of owning and maintaining a home has gone up, but this is a pretty steep increase. Can you take us inside these numbers and talk to us more about these hidden costs?
Sure. So actually, I think there's a little bit of a good news story here. It's not as bad as it looks, actually, is what I think. So the numbers, the report is saying that this hidden cost, the cost of owning and maintaining a home, the things that maybe homeowners don't think about before they get into the whole deal, that those things have gone up about 26% over the last 4 years. So when we think about the cumulative effect of inflation over the last 4 years, and it's kind of right in that range. So the report isn't telling us that the costs of owning and maintaining a home have increased that much more than the cost of inflation.
Yeah, I mean, when people hear that, they think, oh, my goodness, am I ever going to be able to own a home? And so that being said, I mean, is this affecting home sales at all?
It's not really the hidden cost. It's actually the obvious cost of owning a home, right, which is sort of the sales price, the price that you see or the price that you negotiate, and then also the price of the mortgage that you're going to be looking at. And really the big story there is the increase in interest rates, right? And so those are not hidden costs at all. And yes, is this affecting sales? Yes, 100%, right? So this is not a great time to buy a house, at least if you have an option to wait a few years. That's what a lot of people are thinking. But another thing is it's not a great time to sell a house, right? If you are in a home with a mortgage rate that you negotiated a long time ago at a low rate, well, goodness, you don't want to get out of that mortgage and trade it in for one at a much higher rate. So we're definitely seeing that hit consumers.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of people are kind of staying put where they are, maybe just continuing to rent instead of buying a home. Give us some perspective here, though. When was the last time that home costs, prices were this high? I mean, we've seen this before.
Yes, 100%. So if we're thinking about just that 30-year fixed rate mortgage, which we're now looking at about 7.4%, that sounds like ouch, right? Not that long ago, I negotiated a mortgage at, it was like under 3%. So that sounds, but it's, when I got married, around the time I got married, those rates were about that high. So people are seeing about a two-decade high. And if we think back into like the late 1980s and the 90s, more 30-year fixed rates were at that kind of a high. So it's probably more of a story that we've gotten used to being able to borrow money at really, really low rates and maybe even artificially low rates. Yeah.
Yeah. Any signs that maybe, prices will come down, interest rates will lower?
Yeah. For an economist, it's always a dangerous idea to speculate or make a prophecy. But I would not expect those interest rates to be coming down in the near future. Those interest rates are high right now because the Federal Reserve is trying to fight inflation. And we've seen, much higher than hoped for inflation over the last specifically 2 to 3 years. And at the moment, the Fed has signaled that it really wants to keep things under wraps or kind of keep the economy cool a little bit. It doesn't want to see that inflation, those inflation numbers anyway. So I don't see the numbers coming down, the interest rates at least coming down in the near future.
Thank you so much, Catherine, for talking to us. We appreciate it.
Anytime.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the path to sainthood. Learn about the possible canonization calls for a nun who witnessed the only approved Marian apparition in the United States. Plus, a routine day at the Vatican as the Pope meets comedians. The U.S. Bishops' Conference delivers remarks today on why church teaching is against transgenderism. Archbishop Timothy Broglio kicked off the spring assembly of the USCCB Assembly in Louisville, Kentucky, citing the recent Vatican document, Infinite Dignity. Archbishop Broglio says it paints a clear message about many issues that plague our times. He called to mind passages that highlight the gift of human life and how it should be accepted with gratitude. He added that the Catechism shows that the human body shares in the dignity of the image of God. The bishops also approved guidelines for ministering to Native American Catholics. The new document offers an apology for the church's role in operating government-funded indigenous boarding schools in the 19th and 20th centuries. It states that healing can only begin when the church acknowledges the wounds that it caused. As mentioned yesterday, the USCCB is also considering whether to advance on the local level the cause of beatification and canonization of Adele Bryce. In 1859, Sister Adele witnessed the first and only approved Marian apparition in the United States in Champion, Wisconsin. My next guest wrote a book about Sister Adele and Our Lady of Champion. He also says he decided to enter the seminary and become a priest after a visit to Our Lady of Champion when he was in high school. And we turn now to Father Edward Looney from the Diocese of Green Bay, Wisconsin. He wrote his book on Sister Adele while he was still in the seminary. Father, great to be with you today. First off, what was your reaction when you heard the U.S. bishops would be considering whether to advance the beatification and canonization cause for Sister Adele Bryce?
Yeah, you know, I think when it comes to Sister Adele, being the recipient of a Marian apparition is kind of one of those realities that kind of advances a cause for sainthood. We think of the Fatima visionaries, we think of Lourdes, we think of Guadalupe and San Juan Diego. So a lot of Marian visionaries are on the path to sainthood or are already saints. So I think it was just a natural kind of next step.
Yeah, and can you tell us just a little bit more about her and the Marian apparition in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so Adele Bryce, she was an immigrant to the United States. She came from Belgium. She was born, raised in Belgium. When she's in her early 20s, back in 1854, 1855, her family immigrates to the United States, ends up in Wisconsin. There was a really large Belgian settlement in Wisconsin, in the Green Bay area, in the Door County area. In fact, I'm the former pastor in Brussels, Wisconsin. And so in Brussels, they had the largest concentration of Belgian immigrants in the world outside of Belgium itself. So, you know, it was heavily populated by that ethnicity. So Adele simply lives with her family for the next 4 years of her life. And she had a really strong calling to religious life as a young child. When she made her first Holy Communion, she wanted to work in the foreign mission. She wanted to be a religious sister. But when her family decided to come to the States, she went to the priest in Belgium and asked him, what should I do? Should I go to America? Should I become a sister here? And the priest said, go to America, and if you're to become a sister, it'll happen there. So she comes then. She lives with her family. She's doing the chores on the farm, going to the grist mill, everything like that. And that's when the first apparition happened in October of 1859, that she's walking to the grist mill with some grain, and she sees a mysterious woman dressed all in white. This woman quickly vanishes. So she goes home, tells her family what she experienced. Now, she's older, so she's 28 years old. So it's not like a little child like Lourdes or Fatima. So readily believable, tells the story. Her family just thinks maybe it's a poor soul in purgatory. But then The next Sunday, she's walking to church, sees the woman again along this trail between two trees, a maple and a hemlock tree, and she sees Mary again. Again, she quickly vanishes. She says to the people that are with her, her sister and the neighbor, you know, there's that woman again. After Mass, Adele talks to the priest, and the priest says, ask the woman, in God's name, who are you and what do you want of me? And that began the dialogue that we have then in the third apparition of October 9th of 1859, where Mary says, I'm the Queen of Heaven who prays for the conversion of sinners. I wish you to do the same. You received Holy Communion this morning as well. You must do more. You know, offer your Holy Communion for the conversion of sinners. So here we are, Eucharistic revival. You have a Marian apparition talking about receiving Holy Communion.
Oh, so beautiful. And thank you for sharing all of that with us. We really appreciate it. God bless you, Father.
Yeah, well, thank you so much.
My Father also says one of the major messages from Our Lady of Champion is go and fear nothing. Finally, tonight, Pope Francis met with over 100 comedians from around the world this morning at the Vatican. In his address, the Holy Father thanked them for spreading peace and smiles in the midst of so much gloomy news, emphasizing their ability to unite people through laughter. Pope Francis encouraged the comedians to continue to cheer people up, especially those who have the hardest time looking at life with hope. We all need a laugh for sure. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night and God bless.